This is the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Your hosts, Sam Harris and Nicholas Farik, digest the most interesting, informative, and topical books, giving you their biggest insights. We expose different perspectives and tools to look at the world to make you wiser than yesterday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. My name is Nico. I'm joined by my co-host, Sam. And today we're discussing a very, very, let's say, interesting book called Finite and Infinite Games, written by James Kars. Yeah, I think to say that the book can be confusing would be an understatement. Don't you agree, Sam?
Yes. Quite. You could say it could be infinitely confusing depending on how much you think into it. But there's a lot of clarity in things. It could have given you much easier to digest examples within the book. Also, I think it depends on how you read it. I think if you have a lot of time and you were to like read the physical book and sort of spend a lot of time with each sentence and think about it very deeply, you might sort of have some good brainwaves and sit around digesting it. But maybe you need like 2 weeks to just sort of do nothing else but like sit with this book and think about life. But to try and just sort of digest it quite quickly is it's a lot to take on, but it's very cool. It's like, you know, when you take like so those big steps back from like everything you normally think about and go to grand thinking, it's good.
The book feels like the entrance of a very, very, very deep rabbit hole.
You know? Yes.
It's like, how deep you want to go? How much are you willing to spend? Or how much effort do you want to put into understanding everything that the book talks about?
Yeah. And it's not like a rabbit hole that it's not like looking at an optical illusion where once you see the other side, you're just permanently on the other side. You sort of have to actively always be trying to see the other thing. You can't just sort of spend time in the other thing when on the difficult section. As in, some of it you get straight away, I feel, which hopefully we'll be able to bestow on to listeners. Just sort of some of the permanent things where they just keep giving different examples of like, you are not learning to drive a car, you are learning to drive as a car or something. And you're just like, wait, who? What? I don't know what's going on. Yeah, anyway.
There are definitely some mind-blowing quotes in there that you're like, what? What did I just read or what did I just hear? Well, yeah, let's start with a very short summary of the main points, Sam.
So essentially, Finite and Infinite Games is the basis of there are two kinds of games, one finite, the other infinite. And a finite game is played for the purpose of winning and an infinite game for the purpose of continuing play. So it goes on infinitely. And for a finite game, you need to have like boundaries, like rules or spatial boundaries. And like there's an agreed end point and fixated rules of how you will win. And you have to be playing against someone. Whereas an infinite game has no boundaries in time or space and you can play it by yourself. And essentially, even though, well, an infinite game cannot be played within a finite game. But a finite game, you can have infinite finite games within an infinite game.
The way I look at it is, for example, the game of chess. So there is games of chess where two people play against each other. And then there's the game of chess, which has no end, no beginning.
Yeah,
the number of participants always changes. There's no one who can win the game of chess, but you can win a game of chess. And so all the games of chess are parts of the game of chess. But the game of chess is not a part of any one game of chess. That's the way I like to try to understand it.
Yeah, and when we're talking about games, it's not just about games like chess or Monopoly. It's about everything you do essentially is some form of game. Like in life, there's always some form of rules and you're making them up or they are made up. And so the only real infinite game ever is like the game of existence, and that's bounded by the laws of nature. And so everything within that is just sort of stuff that you've made up. So let's say you want to spend time with your kids. There's a nice example that, okay, you want to play Monopoly with them. So if you have like a finite mindset, you'll just play by the rules of Monopoly with your kids and you'll probably beat them. And then they probably don't want to play Monopoly with you anymore after a few goes. So you actually stop spending time with your kids because you played the finite game. Whereas if you play the more infinite game, you'll play Monopoly and pretend to play with the rules yourself, but actually you'll let them win sometimes. So you get to carry on playing with your kids and spending time with them. So that's having a more infinite mindset about what you're doing, essentially, which I think...
That's a great point. Yeah. That's for me, For me, that's actually the main takeaway from the book. For me, the main takeaway from the book is not so much being able to distinguish finite and infinite games and saying, okay, this is a finite game, this is an infinite game. I think the takeaway for me is more how you approach the things you do and the mindset you have. Do you see what you're doing as a finite game, and do you approach it in that way, or are you an infinite player and are you just trying to prolong the play in general? And I think a good example, which is non-traditional games related, is your career. The point of your career is, for some people at least, to have a certain amount of money or a certain position in the company. For others, is to find a purpose and to keep going towards that purpose, I guess. And fighting for a promotion with colleagues, for example, or fighting might be the wrong word, but trying to get one position with a bunch of other applicants is a finite game in the infinite game of a human's career, for example. And so that you can look at the world and a lot of what humans do or what we do as some parts are infinite games and some parts are finite games. I think that's a very interesting take at these kind of things.
And I think it relates a lot into like fixed and growth mindset as well, as in you sort of think you have like inequalities, or okay, I'm going to get to this point where I have the certificate and then I'm good at this, but it's like it's always an infinite level of how much further you can get. Or like, okay, we're going to do this book review on finite and infinite games, so we'll be able to talk about finite and infinite games, but actually we're going to learn about how to do a podcast, we're going to learn how to make better notes, we're going to learn how to talk to people about these things, and there's a much infinite layers of other levels that we're kind of learning and like growing ourselves by doing this. It's not just because if I want to be good at talking about finite and infinite games.
Yeah. For me, it's a lot about the growth mindset, because if you do something competitively, let's say you're a competitive chess player, because I think chess is a nice, simple example. If you compete with someone, if you do a match, a game, if you play a game of chess, for me, there's two ways you can approach it. You can either approach it from the point of view, okay, I want to win this game. Or you can approach it, I want to use this game to become a better chess player. And for me, these are two different ways of looking at chess, or at a chess game in general, and at competitive endeavors as a whole. Because if my goal is to win every game of chess that I can, one easy way for me to do this is to play against people who are not as good as me. I would win every game of chess. However, in order to become a better player, to become a better chess player, I need to lose once in a while. And the more I lose, the more I learn. Because if you play with someone beneath your level, you're not going to learn a lot. If you play against someone who's better than you, you're going to learn way more. And so I think that's where the finite and infinite mindset plays into the growth mindset for me.
Yeah, I think it's really important point that it just has many interpretations of like how you can think about it, I guess, which is where it starts to become a bit more mind-boggling. But so are there any major themes you wanted to discuss? Because it's a range of chapters and themes, but it's a weirdly constructed book. It's kind of just like a set of like rules, and goes rule number 47, and then it just tells you like a bit of a rule of how a game can be played, and then it goes rule number 48, and you're a bit like, what, who? But I don't want to say the book's bad. It's really good. It's like levels of thinking and stuff, but yes.
Yeah, for me, I think the concept of finite and infinite games are the main concept that I took away from the book, because indeed the book goes way more in depth. And if you want to have a good grasp of the book, you need to be prepared to read it at least 3 times, I would say. If you just read it once, you're going to grasp some aspects. But if you want to have a thorough understanding, you're going to have to read it some more times. And so for me, I'm currently at like level 1 out of 10 of understanding the book. And that's the part of you have finite and infinite games. But I liked what you said when you said that, like, you can look at the concepts from different point of views and you can use them differently. Because in my research for the book, so I read the book and then afterwards I was like, this was so confusing. I need someone to talk about this and explain this to me. So I looked up some other podcasts, some other speakers that discussed the book. And there I saw that some like people can look at the book and understand the book is in so many different ways, which is for me, I think a good thing, especially for this kind of book.
There's infinite ways of
of understanding it. And one thing I found noteworthy, so I listened to an interview with the author, and so the author His name is James Kars. He is a university professor of history and literature at the University of New York. And in his interview, he was talking about the way he teaches. And he says that for him, a good class is when the students go outside the class with questions more than answers. So his lectures are meant to be thought-provoking, where students, like his dream is that a student goes out of the class, talks to other students and says, okay, you want to grab a coffee or a beer so we can discuss what we just learned? And so he wants to get people thinking. And I had the impression that that is exactly the way he approached his book as well. Because this book is not not your standard explanatory book, which explains concepts and gives 10 different examples so you really grasp it. He explains a very high level concept and then wants you to think about it and to understand it in your different way. And perhaps in different ways, like to understand it in different ways over different points of views and time.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that the book is really old. I think he wrote it like 40 years ago or something. And
it's written or published in 1986, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It's older than us, Sam.
Yeah, it's got some nice things. I think you can apply it a lot to like people, but then when you start applying it to sort of business and other stuff, it makes sense, or culture. It talks about like a culture is sometimes opposed by suppressing its ideas, but like that's bound to fail. So it sort of limits creativity with like what it's trying to actually produce at the end, which is the same with like a person, as in if you put too many rules on you and you don't let yourself grow, you're just being like finite. And we have like all this culture and like society where we define how we're going to be, and then we sort of don't allow the infinite nature of change and future growth and stuff. And so we kind of put ourselves into the problems like we are, with the massive societal issues today and being unable to deal with like the current problems because we're playing the wrong games. And so if you think about like capitalism and everything, we're sort of driving the games to sort of dictate how we want to win at the game of life, but it's not actually the best way to win at the game of life currently, because it means that we should be sort of making oil and all these things that aren't helpful and are causing problems to the planet and causing greed and societal shifts are sort of due to the way that we have these finite games. And so if we had a more infinite game of like, okay, how do we survive better as a species and create the most happiness, we'd be playing it very differently. And we sort of dictate our rules more logically if we stepped out to think about how we'd really do it, which is a useful framework to be thinking about, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree. It actually makes me think about one key takeaway I can imagine for the book would be the following. I think one of the problems in politics these days is that the time that one party or one person is in power is limited. And so for them is, for example, when a president in the US gets elected, they have 4 years. In these 4 years, their goal is to be reelected in the next 4 years. And then when they finish those 4 years, it's okay, up to the next person. And it's the same in Belgium where I live. I mean, people are elected for a certain amount of time. And after they lose power, they don't really care what happens. And so what I see right now is that problems are pushed forward, you know? Short-term solutions are being used to fix very big problems. But because they're so short-term, they don't really fix the problem. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a very big gaping wound. And so
definitely,
what I would say is that the system itself should be designed in such a way that all participants are forced to act as infinite players more than finite players.
Yeah, so definitely playing to defeat the other player rather than to be the best they can be. And that's just ultimately stupid. And you spend so much energy doing like the wrong things. It's just a massive waste of time and not helpful for anyone. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the nature of politics in our perceived fair system, or democratic system, or whatever you want to say. And actually, it's got like huge amounts of flaws. It's very interesting. And it's a useful conversation because I think this is sort of where some of the things are heading in society as a whole. So kind of noticing more and more problems with what we have. So I feel like I feel like there's been like a bit of a resurgence of this book in general. So when it first came out, I think it did all right and then was quiet for a while, but then sort of getting more and more popular more recently over the last 10 years of people thinking about this in business. And the same with like growth mindset and stuff becoming a bigger thing, and just all the whole politics side of things is just becoming a lot more poignant and relevant. Probably it was relevant at the time because, you know, he was able to think about these things. it's the right time. But
yeah, I mean, the book is a way to perceive the world, and I think it's always going to be equally relevant. But what I do think is that for now, its resurgence comes because of Simon Sinek, who wrote a book called, I think, The Infinite Game. The Infinite Player. Exactly. And it's based on the concept that from this book. And so that's, I think, why there's suddenly a resurgence in popularity. And I do like, for me, the main takeaway from the book, Finite and Infinite Games, and what we were discussing, is from the same perspective as Simon Sinek looks at it. He talks about business most of the time, but it's just because a lot of people work in business, so can easily imagine or understand the concepts there. And so he looks at business as you can run a business with a finite mindset, or you can run a business with an infinite mindset. And a finite mindset is, oh, I have to achieve these numbers by the end of this year. But the thing is that the numbers are arbitrary, and the end of the year is also arbitrary. And so a lot of companies are managed with very short-term goals, the next quarter, the next year, maybe the next 2 to 3 years. But the game of business is actually infinite. Every industry is an infinite industry. And so companies that have an infinite mindset will always do better on the long term than companies that have a short-term mindset.
Yeah, so like, if you want to be number one at what? Like number one this year, number one in just sort of music downloads, like what is the best company kind of thing? And it's just weird arbitrary rules that you use to define that within a limit. But then he talks about like Apple versus Microsoft, and Apple we're talking about, okay, how do we just sort of make our customer the happiest as we can? Whereas Microsoft was like, how do we beat Apple? And and so like Apple obviously sort of has been doing much better on these things, but it's hard to sort of say exactly because they're still all both playing kind of finite games with their profit quarters and all these things.
I mean, I think it also, Simon Sinek also says that goals are not bad. They're a means of playing the infinite game of business, right? So, I often, when I hear these concepts, I'm trying to find a way, how can I use this in my advantage? And I'd be curious if there would be a way to easily qualify the level of infinite mindset that a company has. So if I hear Simon Sinek talk about how people think it at Apple and how people think at Microsoft, me as an investor, I'd be interested to know if it would be possible to quickly qualify every possible publicly traded company and see if on the very long term, it would be interesting to use this matter, like the infinite mindsetness. Yeah. Of a company into the investment decision, where you can say, like, on the long term, if you're trying to beat the competition, or in the long term, if you're trying to build a better world, let's say, the latter seems better because industries change, technologies influence so much of what a business does. So, but that'd be interesting for me to know and to see.
Yeah, it definitely is. And Tesla certainly doing so well because it's more sort of got a much more longer term vision
rather than
we want to make like a good car right now. It's sort of like, okay, how do we make a car of the future that's everyone needs kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of big players are just trying to keep their market share instead of finding ways to stay in the business for the long future.
Yeah, yeah. They're still trying to focus on like profits for like, yeah, this quarter, as we already mentioned, which doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be around in like 10 years time.
Any other key takeaways from your point of view?
I just really like the sort of the double nature of the how you look at things. So as in like a quote is in like, waste is just our perception of waste. Like actually everything we generate is just a product of what we're doing, whether it's waste or like the thing that we're selling, it's all our product. So it depends on how we define it, and whether something's good or bad is something we label it with, but we should be sort of seeing everything we do as not sort of on the one side or the other side. It's just is. And it's sort of how he talks about like so many different things, as in like, you do not think your own thoughts, your thoughts think themselves, and this kind of stuff where you're like, he just has loads of these quotes that are like double back on themselves, and mm-hmm. He just says a sentence and he says it like in a different way. And it's kind of like constantly, it's like talking to Yoda, but instead of him being like wise you are, it's more like the car is not a car, it's you. And you're just like, wait, who? Okay, I think it's really nice. And it is like looking at an illusion the whole time at everything that's in your life is sort of, it's like the complete opposite. And yeah. It's a good mindset to get into. And I swear at the time when I was first reading it, when I finished reading it a few days ago, I started doing that with everything. And like, yeah, talking to someone cooking, it's like, oh, you're not cooking your food. The food is cooking itself or something. It's just like, it's just stupid, but that wasn't really the right example. But you can kind of start doing this for stupid things. And it's sort of interesting to just sort of try and think about it from like the opposite mindset of like, okay, it's not what you're doing. It's what is being done. And how does that do things to you kind of stuff. And it just gets you outside of your perceptions of how things are, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I like how you're thinking, because you go deeper than I did. For me, I'm like, there's one straw that I managed to grasp, which is a not very profound understanding of one single concept. I'm like, okay, I've got the book, I'm covered. And you're trying to go deeper. And because, to be honest, infinite, the concepts of infinite and finite games are probably 10% of the book. And it goes way deeper than this. And that's why I'm definitely going to need a reread in a few months. To perhaps go a bit deeper into the book and all the concepts that it discusses. For me, the first time I read the book, I felt like there was a guy with a tinfoil hat talking, on the street corner. He's like, the end is near, or something like that. And really, like, some of the quotes, like you said, he's saying, like, if you're using a machine to do something, it's not, you're not using the machine, but you are a machine. Or you're part of a machine, and these kind of things. And it was just, I was just not smart enough to grasp it. Or at least I didn't feel smart enough to grasp it. And it felt like, it's someone crazy talk. And for me, honestly, the experience of this book was a roller coaster. First time I read it, I was like, oh my God, this was terrible. Please give me another book. And then I started thinking more, I started researching more, and I started appreciating it more. And so the more I think of it, the more I go into it, the more I appreciate the book, and the better my perception of it becomes. And so if you had asked me to give you a score right after I finished the book, I would probably have given you like a 1 or 2, because I was so confused. I didn't understand anything. And the book is so profound and has so many layers. And now I'm finally starting to see layers, and I've managed to pull back one layer. And so I know how deep it goes. And so, I'm starting to appreciate it way more now.
It's nice layers. Like a quote, like, the genuine travel does not have a destination. Travelers do not go somewhere, but constantly discover that they are somewhere else. And then again, it's like, so I'm permanently somewhere. I'm not going anywhere, but I'm just in new places. And it's like, what? Okay, this is weird. I guess kind of correct, maybe. And yeah, it's interesting sort of ways to look at stuff. Or like, one that sort of makes more sense instantly is that travel is not measured in distance, but in difference. So like the motels around like airports in Frankfurt or Tokyo might be exactly the same. So it's not really different, but like it's the difference in like your own eyes of what you perceive is like how far you traveled. So if you go into the rest of Tokyo, like, sure, it's going to be bloody mental compared to Frankfurt. But if you just go to like the hotel, it's not, which is sort of like a deep and interesting way to look at things. Although it depends on, obviously travel is technically just distance, but it's sort of actually what is travel for and what's the point of it and how do you feel about it? Because when I go traveling, I try and get involved in the culture and stuff, but I know friends that have traveled to like loads of different countries, but just on business, but all they ever spend is doing it in boardrooms in like fancy hotels, and they don't really feel like they've traveled anywhere. If they spend the entire time working and being in boardrooms, it's not really like actual travel as such. It's just being on an airport and being in a boardroom. It's not like seeing the world of difference.
Mm-hmm. The book goes so deep that there's so much to talk about and so much to think about that we can't, like, we would need 10 episodes at least to be able to discuss all the main concepts that the book goes into. I would say the following. If you are interested in reading this book, be prepared to dedicate at least a reread and also some time thinking. If you just want to read the book once and then get it over with, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, if you're reading it just because of other people who've read it, maybe not. If you read it because you're super into this kind of concept, definitely. And yeah, and try listening to other conversations with other people, or read it with someone else who's willing to have a conversation with you.
Absolutely. If I didn't have this podcast, I would have read it and I would have cursed Sam for making me read it, and I would have never looked at it again. But because I'm forced to discuss this on the podcast, I was lucky enough to be forced. And so I had to get some more information, think about it a bit more, and it started clicking more and more. So I would say, if you're willing to go into the rabbit hole a bit, go for the book. It's going to broaden your perspective and your horizon for sure.
Cool. All right. So what was your current rating then now?
I would say, that's a good question. Out of 10, I would give it, I'm going to say 8.
Yeah.
It's not a must read. I think it's super interesting. It is life-changing, but the same concept. I think, for example, one of the more interesting concepts for me, at least, is perfectly put into the book by Simon Sinek, although I haven't read it. I'm sure that it explains it in a better way, or a more accessible way and a clearer way with more examples. So I would say that concept alone, if you want to understand that, you can read the Simon Sinek book. However, this book just is so much more high level that it's like you can spend a month on one simple book with 100 simple rules, on one book with 100 rules, and just keep discovering new things.
Yeah, that's at the conceptual level, I'd say it's an 8 or a 9. On like a readability, digestible level for fun, I'd say like a 6. But if I was wanting to take myself further, then certainly, like if I was doing my like PhD thesis or something in philosophy, it would be like a great way to really sort of unpack my mind deeply on it. Whereas a Simon Sinek, I think, would be like very entry level of the same concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd start with that book to sort of get it, but then this would be like, okay, how do I take myself further? And like, what can I like sit down with and really sort of bathe in the thoughts of weirdness? And this would be a further version of it. So
yes,
in between the two is an overall rating, I guess, an 8, 7.5. Good, well decided. Yeah. I mean, it's an infinite book, isn't it? So it's finite. Giving it a score is a finite thing.
There's an infinite way of thinking about the book, I guess. Yeah. One more point is that reading the book and listening to an interview with the author of the book got me in touch with people who are very much into mythology and philosophy to a level where they were discussing stuff and I had no clue what they were talking about. Not at all. They were like talking over my head so much, and it made me want to be able to understand them. So it opened my mind. Well, I started appreciating the deeper levels of philosophy, and now I kind of feel like I want to be able to understand them, which would already be a victory for me. So I think we might want to put one of these kind of books back on the menu in a few weeks. So we can see where the rabbit hole goes.
We have with the next one, Fooled by Randomness, is I think a similar book to this.
All right. I'm excited.
But I was going to say, that's interesting because if you listen to like a lot of Jordan Peterson, he does a lot of mythology relating to philosophy. So I thought maybe you've got those things more easily, but apparently.
Yeah, no, not really, actually. I'm more into the human psychology. I'm more interested in the human psychology part of what Jordan Peterson says more than the symbolism.
Because he's got a lot of those lectures. And I didn't really listen to all of those. Whereas like his book's more just on like human psychology. Definitely read more of. But I did find them kind of interesting, but just somehow not quite interesting enough to like spend lots of time listening to more of them.
The opportunity cost is too high, man.
Yeah.
There's other books. There's The Game to read, you know, How to Seduce Women.
Yeah, which is certainly an interesting one because I do go into finite and infinite games of relationships and all this stuff.
So if you want to get confused and start discovering layers of complexity and philosophy, go for the book. I would recommend it. So I think that wraps up this episode. For the next, we will be discussing Fooled by Randomness by Nassim Taleb. Very excited for that book because it's finally a bit more back to my side, which is, you know, the economy, business, and stuff. So I'm excited for that. So
I had lots of good things. Ciao.